Welcome to American Indian Living, a program developed by the Native Education and Health Initiative to improve and enhance the health of people throughout the Native communities. American Indian Living is hosted by Dr. David DeRose, a board-certified specialist in both internal medicine and preventive medicine. Dr. DeRose has a wide range of experience with Native health issues, and he's ready today to help you learn more about your health. Here's Dr. DeRose.
Welcome to American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Today we've got an exciting show lined up for you. It's one that's taking in elements that you can apply, whether it's in your home, whether it's dealing with tribal issues, whether it's in your business. It's talking about bringing your game up to a higher level. Step up and play big. That's the title of the book that we're featuring on today's program. The author is Chris Ruisi. Chris, great to have you with us.
David, thanks so much for inviting me. I'm looking forward to it.
Chris, you have been doing this job of coaching for quite a while. In fact, you're often referred to as simply the coach. Have I got that right?
That is correct.
Tell me why you got that moniker.
Well, how I got it was very simple. I spent 35 years in the corporate world, loved every minute of it, but it came time for a change, and I decided to become a business coach because in the corporate world, my job was to build teams, develop leaders, and building teams and developing leaders on a team is what a coach does. And I went to my first ever Chamber of Commerce networking breakfast, and before I got up to give my what they call 30-second commercial, about 15 other people who all stood up and said they were coaches. And I said, my God, they've all come to this breakfast. And when it came time for me to introduce myself, I said, hi, I'm Chris Ruisi, and I'm the coach. And it's stuck with me ever since. But the real reason is, again, going to what I said before, what does a coach do, whether it's in sports and in any endeavor? They help you see your capabilities. They help you find your sweet spot, if you will. They help you tap into the capabilities you have but are either not using or underutilizing. They offer you honest and constructive feedback, and they're not afraid to tell it like it is to you, and they're the one who's holding you accountable, saying, now, David, last week you told me this was an important next step for you, and you haven't done it yet.
Mm-hmm.
What's holding you back, David, other than you?
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of coaching in a nutshell, and if anybody tells you it's more than that, they're not telling you the truth, because in essence, I work on the 7 inches between my clients' ears, because that's where our success bar is set every single day.
What's amazing to me about your principles is these principles transcend whatever environment we're in, and I know that you've been applying these principles right in your own home, because stories are so powerful in Indian country. Tell us a little bit about why someone who might say, well, I'm not in any leadership position at the tribe, I'm not in a business leadership position, why should everyone be interested in what we're talking about today?
Because we're all in control of our own destiny. You know, when I give a talk, I talk about Alfred Nobel, who is known for the Peace Prize, but very few people know that he invented dynamite. And how the Peace Prize came about was one day they mistakenly published his obituary. He hadn't died. And in there they talked about he invented dynamite and it blew up things. And he didn't want to be known as someone who invented something that blew up things. So what he did was he put aside some money from his estate to create the Nobel Peace Prize. And that's how we know him. He changed his destiny. It works with yourself. If you're unhappy with something in your life, then create a vision for what you want to change, and then start with small steps, maybe the first 3 steps, to put you on that path to make that vision a reality. I did it with my younger son once. He was a sophomore. It was the summer between his freshman and sophomore years, and he had done everything he could possibly do wrong in his freshman year of college. And we were sitting one night, and I said, gee, Andrew, what do people think about you? He goes, oh, Dad, I'm the guy. He was in Navy ROTC. He goes, Dad, I'm the guy who, you know, I'll do anything for a laugh. People will edge me on to do stuff, and I accept the challenge. And I end up getting in trouble, and I don't think people respect me for that. And I asked him, well, who do you want to be? And he said, I want to be the go-to guy. And I'll fast forward to his graduation and commissioning. He was awarded a sword for leadership. He set goals every semester. where he would meet with his professors. He had goals for his physical training, what he wanted to achieve in terms of his mile run, his time, push-ups, pull-ups, whatever the case may be. And at graduation, the night before we were having dinner, and his cell phone was ringing off the hook. Come on, Andrew, we're all up here together for your dinner, for your commissioning and graduation. Can you give the phone a rest? And he looked at me and goes, Dad, remember I said I want to be the go-to guy? And I said, sure, Andrew, what's that all about? He goes, well, there's a big dispute going on within the organization, within the battalion, as to which ribbons we should wear tomorrow for our graduation and commissioning. And the gunnery sergeant wants us to wear one ribbon, and our lieutenant wants us to wear the other. Nobody knows what to do. They're all calling me because I'm the go-to guy. So Andrew changed his destiny by first creating a vision.
Tremendous.
That night we sat down. I said, how do you want to be known? And we can all do that, Dave. But I what frustrates me when I want to leap over the desk and slap somebody in the head is when they just are willing to be a victim of their circumstances. All they have to do is take that first step, and that works in everything, our personal lives, business, our children, family, whatever the case may be.
Well, speak to us very practically, because I know that's what your book does. You like to break things down into very simple steps. Someone's listening right now, and they say, yes, I want to change my destiny, whether it's in the workplace, whether it's in the home. What are those concrete things that someone has to do?
First thing they have to do is to have a good assessment as to where they are, their reality, and then create that vision. And don't go more than 1 or 2 years out. But be as specific as you can as to what you want the desired outcome to be of that vision when it becomes a reality. If it's adding or addition to your home, tell me the color of the room. Tell me how many windows. Tell me what you're going to do in the room. If it's having a better relationship with your spouse, tell me the kind of things that you're going to do with your spouse a year from now on a consistent basis, maybe a hobby together, whatever the case may be. But being specific helps your mind identify what the right actions are in order to achieve that vision. Next is you've got to start to look for and take a risk of and using capabilities, doing things that you may not have done before because you're afraid. You've got to be like a turtle. A turtle moves forward by sticking their neck out. And in life, if we're going to achieve success, we have to learn to stick our neck out. Not crazy risks, but reasonable ones. Next is you've got to be able to manage, avoid, and fight distractions. You know, we only have 7 inches between our ears. That's not a lot of space for all the things that go up there during the course of a day. So you've got to not invite distractions up there. And the way you do that is if you have a specific vision and goals, and you stay focused on what you're going to do, you use up all of the available mental space where distractions might find a home. Next is, when we talk about leadership, yeah, we think of leaders traditionally as leading people. But if we can't lead ourselves, there's no way we can influence or lead others, whether it be our children, our family members, whatever the case may be. Next is you have to take a hard look at your habits. Our habits define us. And there may be some habits that got you where you are at a certain point in your life. Those may not be the habits that you need to adopt to get you where you want to go. I have to be if I want to have a better relationship with my family, my children, and my spouse, I have to develop a better habit of listening. I can't shut people off. I can't cut them off. So, as you said to me before, we can't walk on others' words, on our words. So, habits are critical. Next is you've got to be able to handle tough stuff. We all have things we try to avoid, and we become the eternal optimist thinking, well, if I ignore it, it'll go away. And you know what? It never goes away. It only gets worse. So you've got to be able to make tough decisions, handle the tough stuff when it needs to be handled, and not push it off. And finally, going back to taking a risk, you have to learn what are your right decisions. And what I sometimes do, and I did this with my younger son, is I talk in terms of game film. You know, all good coaches look at game films to determine what they did in one game and worked or didn't work, and how they're going to use that knowledge in their next game. So what I do with my son, and I suggest others also try this, that if you had to relive a less than satisfactory situation, if you had to do it all over again, with the knowledge that you have now, ask yourself these four questions and answer them. What would you then start doing if you had a second chance? What would you stop doing? Mm. What would you do more of? What would you do less of? And if you do that periodically, you will put yourself on a track to use your past experiences to make better decisions. And if you make a wrong decision, if you can live with the worst outcome of it, you make another decision to make it right.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that complicated.
I mean, these are some great steps. One of them that really resonated with me, both in the book and as you're reciting through these, you're talking about taking risks. I mean, you got a great cut line here on page 28 where you say, if you don't experience a setback now and then, you're playing it too safe. Talk to folks who are afraid of failure when it comes to setting goals.
Well, what happens, David, is that when we do that and we play it too safe, we are actually self-sabotaging ourselves.
Hmm.
We're convincing ourselves without any basis of fact, we're doing it just on emotion and fear, that you can't do something or I can't do something. And when you start to tell yourself that you can't do things, you start to believe it. You're conditioning your mind to believe it. And that becomes obvious not only to yourself where you are reluctant to try something new, but others observe that.
Mm-hmm.
And people complain why I didn't get the promotion or why I didn't get that other job. Well, maybe you're sending a message that you're not ready to do that, or at least that's the message you're sending, and all of a sudden you're in a downward spiral all by your own creating.
Mm-hmm.
And you've built a wall around yourself in terms of fear, that you've talked yourself out of what you can do or what you can try to do, and that's called self-sabotage. And again, if you make mistakes are the greatest way to learn.
Hmm.
You can't make mistakes if you're playing it too safe, because when you make a mistake, you get to learn from it, you get to own it, you get to fix it, and you get to move on. So my advice to people is don't worry about making mistakes. Just learn how to make glorious recoveries.
Great message. Glorious recoveries. I like that.
You know, and I've had plenty of experience in that, let me tell you, in my personal as well as business career.
Well, you know, one of the amazing things to me, Chris, is we've got a diverse listenership. You're talking to folks who I know can relate to what you're saying on a personal level. And I'm now thinking of many of the people who are tribal leaders, leaders in other respects, who tune into the show. And some of them might say, well, a lot of these things may work personally, creating a vision, taking risk, fighting distractions. But hey, I don't have problems this way. The problems I've got are with the people under me. And I'm not accomplishing things because the folks that I'm stuck with on this team are holding me back. What do you say to someone who's in a leadership position and just feels like they can't move forward because of the team that they're working with?
Well, who's ever listening, I want you to take out a pen and paper and write this down. If the student hasn't learned, maybe the teacher hasn't taught.
Okay.
As a leader, it's your responsibility. I once had a client say to me, Chris, all of my employees are dumb. Nobody's as smart as me. And I looked at him and I said, well, Frank, who hired them? Or did they just show up on your doorstep on a dark, windy, rainy night? If a leader doesn't have a vision of what he's trying to create, he doesn't know what kind of people, the types of people, their skills and backgrounds that he needs to have on his team.
Mm.
And if he doesn't have a vision, he can't teach his team members. Most of us will teach our teams what to do, how to do it, and when to do it. But if you don't have a good vision, you can't teach them those three things, and you also can't teach them why they do it, who they do it for, and where it all fits in. Those last three pieces, David, why, who, and where it fits in, are critical to building an engaged team, because I don't care where that workforce is today, all of us as individuals, we want to know that we're part of something bigger and that we're contributing to something, so that if we feel personal satisfaction, that sort of rolls up among all the team members.
Great, great messages. This is powerful, Chris. We've got to step away. We're basically winding down in our first segment, but we want you to stay by. Chris has got some amazing leadership insights that are going to help you, whether you're just trying to actually take charge of your own life, whether it relates to something with your family, your tribe, your business. Chris Ruisi, he is the coach. He's the author of the book, Step Up and Play Big. A lot more coming up. Don't go away. We're going to stay tuned. You do too. We'll be right back. I'm Dr. DeRose.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
Navigating this world when you are undereducated can be difficult. I'm Dr. Ben Carson, and I know this for a fact. When I was growing up, my family lived in dire poverty, and because of my poor learning skills, my classmates called me dummy. My life began to turn around when my mother encouraged me to read. I went from the bottom of my class to graduating from Yale University and becoming the youngest director of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins Hospital. I know how important it is to nurture a child's dream.
When I grow up, I want to become a scientist.
I want to be a doctor, just like Ben Carson.
I hope to become an engineer.
I want to be a teacher or maybe a broadcaster.
The Carson Scholars Fund is impacting schools across the nation by encouraging children to read, write, and excel at math and science so they can realize their dreams. We need your help. To learn more about the Carson Scholars Fund and to donate, visit our website at carsonscholars.org.
After all, the person who has the most to do with your success is you.
This is the story of Daniel, who was born 2 months early. He weighed 1 pound, 7 ounces. His lungs weren't ready. His heart wasn't ready. His brain wasn't ready. At the hospital, the nurses said Daniel was a fighter, and they would do all they could to help him. The doctor said even with the best care, Daniel may never walk. He may never see. He may never learn. Daniel's parents spent night after night at the hospital, watching his every breath, holding his tiny hands, and looking for signs that he was growing stronger. At home, his parents looked around Daniel's empty nursery, at the quiet toys and the still rocker, and they hoped that one day they could sit in that rocking chair and tell this story to their very healthy son. Daniel's is just one of the more than 500,000 stories of babies born prematurely last year, but there's hope for a happy ending. The March of Dimes is funding the research and programs to stop premature birth. You can help bring more babies home healthy. Learn how at marchofdimes.com. Working together for stronger, healthier babies.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to American Indian Living, Dr. David DeRose. With me today, Chris Ruisi. Chris is the coach. He's also the author of the book, Step Up and Play Big. The subtitle of the book, Unlock Your Potential to Be Exceptional in 8 Simple Steps. Chris, some are just joining us. Others have been with us from the top of the hour. And folks are wanting more information. How do they get a copy of your book?
Well, they can go to Amazon.com and order it right there. They could go to my website, chrisruisi.com, and on the main navigation bar, click on products, and you can buy the book there. If you buy the book there, I will send you a signed copy, along with, I'll throw in my my complimentary playbook, which goes with the book, and I'll throw in some special Step Up and Play Big chocolate.
Oh, wow. You're really pulling out all the stops.
Well, you know, you want them to remember you. So, but no, you can go to Amazon.com. I know it's on Barnes & Noble, but the most commonly used one is Amazon. Or if they go to my website and order it on the products page, and I'll be happy to sign the book for them.
Now, I know how to spell your last name, but if someone else is wanting to go to chrisruisi.com, that may be a challenge. So help us out.
Okay, here we go. It's Chris, C-H-R-I-S-R-U-I-S-I. All one word.
Okay, so Chris, C-H-R-I-S, that's straightforward, R-U-I-S-I, right?
Right.
.com.
Yep.
Okay, we know where to go. By the way, if someone's just wanting more pointers, do you have some of that available free, or is that not with this?
Yeah, on my website. I look at my website as a porthole to knowledge.
Great.
And if they go to the... there's my speaking page, all the topics and things I talk about, but there's a tab called Resources.
Mm-hmm.
And if you click on Resources, you're going to see several sub-tabs. One is my Monday morning wake-up call. That's a free Monday morning newsletter. Shows up in your inbox at about 7:30 in the morning, and it deals with one particular topic, skill, or helpful tool that you can use to improve your business, your life, whatever the case may be. I don't try to sell anything in there. I give a quote, and then that's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm.
Also there, under that same resources tab, you'll see something that is called Step Up and Play Big Moments. What those are, and those are free, those are anywhere from 3 to 5 minute audio files, podcasts, on a number of subjects, and they range from personal development, business development, let me just quickly think for a second, you have Finding Common Ground deals with communication. What it means is an old Navy SEAL expression, the only easy day was yesterday. And it talks about how you can apply that to your life. How to avoid boss burnout is one audio file. How to keep things simple. So there's handling distractions. There's a fair number of subjects on those audio files. There's about 35 or 36 of them up there now.
Great.
And it's a 3 to 5 minute investment of your time. You can download it and take it with you in your car, on your personal player. There's no reason why you can't always be investing some time to make yourself better.
That's excellent.
My job, David, as a coach, is to make it so simple that I take away all the excuses for a person to make the decision to want to be better than they were yesterday.
I like your philosophy, Chris, and we can get all that at chrisruisi.com.
That's correct.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about these subjects. One of the things that's come up a few times on the show is dealing with distractions. I mean, there's so many things that we're bombarded with. How can someone avoid being distracted?
Having clarity first in what they're trying to do and what their vision is. But let me bring it down, David, to a more basic level. The first thing that I say to people is, when you work, show up at work, whatever you at your desk, own the first 10 or 15 minutes of your day. Take the time to think about what you have to do, the order in which you have to do it, and what you want to accomplish that day. The second thing is, I say to them, ask yourself this question. What is the most important thing that I have to do today? And whatever that thing is, that's what you start working on first. We get distracted to work on the easier stuff because we might think, or we might believe that that most important thing is harder or the hardest. Well, if you get the hardest things done first, you build momentum through the rest of the day and you burn through everything else. And then once you've identified what you believe is the most important thing you have to do, ask yourself this question, what could possibly get in the way of me accomplishing that today? And if you do that, if a barrier shows up, an obstacle, which could be another distraction, you have Plan B ready to put into place.
So Plan B is going to still help you reach that original goal, though.
Right. It's how you're going to deal with an obstacle or barrier that might pop up.
So we've got a focus as we come into the workplace or as we start our day off in the home. And once we've got that focus, we're anticipating things that may derail us. We've got a backup plan. What else fits into this equation?
Well, what else would fit into that is what I call SOS, or the shiny object syndrome. And that's when we're attracted to things that look pretty good. Things I call it things that look good, but eventually you find out they do no good.
Wow.
They don't move you closer to your goals. They don't improve the quality of whatever you're trying to do, but they really look interesting. And you decided you were going to get off track and go find out that you made the wrong decision by going to try and find out.
So give us an example of what these shiny objects are.
Well, they generally take the shape of shortcuts. Okay? Things that you think will make your job easier. Or the things that allow you what I call to wing it, where you don't practice or prepare for what you're going to do. You think you can wing your way through it, talk your way through it, but winging it only gets you so far. I don't know how many of your listeners remember St. John's University basketball team. And they had an infamous or famous coach there named Lou Carnesecca. And Lou used to wear these ratty green sweaters. He was half the size of all of his basketball players. But Lewis said something which was very important. He said, nothing takes place on the court that doesn't take place in practice first. So winging it is a distraction. You should try to practice and prepare for things, and that'll help you fight off the distraction to try to fly by the seat of your pants.
Very good.
Another distraction might be allowing other people to have your time. People who walk into your office unannounced, uninvited, and the question starts with, hey, David, I got a problem. Can I pick your brain? And I live by the rule that if someone wants my help like that, they first need to tell me what they tried and didn't work, or they want to brainstorm a specific activity. But I can't let other people's poor preparation or poor planning cause a crisis for me. It's how we treat our time. We have to learn to say no to trivial things to fight distractions. Time, I don't believe that time management exists. To me, it's, I call it you management. It's what you do with the time you have available that day that will determine whether or not you will be successful. So if you have a vision, if you know what your most important task is, if you know what your alternative might be if you face an obstacle, and you know how to say no to interruptions, that those that come up as a result of others, you're more than likely going to fight off distractions successfully. Now, we don't live in a bubble where we can ignore it completely, but we can mitigate it to a larger extent than we are right now today as individuals. And last but not least, sometimes the things we have to get done are very big. They have lots of steps. And if you try to take it on all in one swoop, you're going to get discouraged, you're going to get distracted, or you're going to allow distractions to pull you away from it. And there what the advice is to, if you've got a big project, work on one segment first. Get that segment done, figure out what you learned from it, and then plan to do the next segment.
Now, Chris, one of the ironies that I'm hearing as I'm listening to you and having read through a good portion of your book, you talk a lot about the importance of leaders being listeners, and that really resonated with me on a number of levels. But at the same time, now we're speaking about distractions, and it seems like one of those things that can distract you is people wanting you to listen to them. Can you help us resolve that tension?
Sure. When I talk about distractions and people wanting them to listen to them, those are unannounced visits. No, look, there's always time to deal with a crisis. You have to make time for that. But, you know, many people will go ask for help when, in fact, with a little extra effort, they can find the answer. And all you're doing as a leader, when you come in, you're not listening to them. You're solving their problem. And what I learned from one of my mentors was whenever I brought him a problem, all he did was ask me questions.
Right.
I realized I knew how to find the solution all by myself.
No, that's great. That's a great message.
Part of being a good leader is to ask questions of your team, to challenge them, and to really cut through the clutter of them trying to get you to do their job, to separate that from teaching them how to do it on their own going forward. And this way, once they see that they did know the answer or they knew how to find the answer, they're going to get some satisfaction and know that they can do that, maybe something even at a higher level in the future.
Excellent, Chris. We've got to step away once more. I'm talking with Chris Ruisi. He's the author of the book Step Up and Play Big. A lot more powerful insights from Chris coming up in the next half of American Indian Living. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
American Indian Living will continue in a moment. If you have questions or comments about today's pre-recorded broadcast, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared. It's kind of like an elephant is on my chest.
I feel like I'm choking.
Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
You know how to react to their asthma attacks. Here's how to prevent them. Visit www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many.
I feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA and the Ad Council.
Did you know 26 million Americans have kidney disease and most don't know it?
The day I was diagnosed, I didn't know what to do. I called the National Kidney Foundation, and the young lady who answered stayed on the phone with me and walked me through step by step. She, too, was surviving kidney disease, and she showed me there could be life after kidney disease.
Visit the National Kidney Foundation at kidney.org. Now you know.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE, 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to American Indian Living. Dr. David DeRose with my guest, Chris Ruisi. Chris is the coach. He's also the author of the book Step Up and Play Big. He's been sharing with us, really, insights from his book and his life work. You need to really pay attention to this last half of the show because Chris is giving you a lot more information. He's giving it to me, and he's helping us to reach more of those goals that we've got in life. Chris, one of the things that you talked about as you walked us through a construct at the beginning of the program was 8 steps that can help us all be successful. Some of those focus on our personal productivity. What is that all about?
That's right, David. That's a good jumping off point here for this part of the show. You know, we all are challenged every day to get as much as we possibly can get done, and unfortunately, a lot of people define working hard as based on the number of hours they work, the length of their to-do list, the number of dinners that they eat either cold or alone, or the number of family events that they miss because they are surrounded, if you will, they are consumed by what they do at work. And working hard or working long hours isn't necessarily the right measuring tool for how successful and how productive you can be. It all comes down to results.
Yeah, and I think this is a real challenge, isn't it? Because we see whether it's in a tribal setting and family members moving off the reservation, we're not speaking against that, but families are getting disconnected, whether it's in Indian country or elsewhere. And even if you're living together, like you said, Chris, it seems like by many metrics, you're doing better if you're away from the family, and this is taking a toll in the home, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, you only go this way once, and you want to make sure that you enjoy and nurture every single moment that you possibly can. Look, I don't believe that there's such a thing as work-life balance. Okay, because you never can separate yourself from your work and vice versa. But what I try to do and what I try to coach people to do is that when you're at work, you're 100% at work. When you're with family or in personal pursuit, you're 100% in personal pursuit or in family endeavors. I used to chuckle when I would hear businessmen tell me, or leaders, well, I had some quality time with my family today. And they've got it backwards. It's not the quality of the time you spend with your family. It's the quantity of time you spend with your family and the quality of time you spend at work.
Break that down. Break that down for us.
Sure. If you have a vision, you have clarity, if you know what your most important task is at work, you're going to have a quality day. You're going to get things done. You're going to achieve results. And vice versa, when you're at home with your family, every minute you spend with them is quality time. Well, at least it should be. So why wouldn't you want to spend as many minutes of them as with them as you possibly can? So it's the quantity of what you do with your family and your hobbies. If it's just, you know, staring at the sky, whatever it is, you want to do as much of it as you possibly can. And the better your personal time is, the more time you spend in personal pursuits, it actually serves as a mental reboot for your mind, which makes you more productive at work.
This whole challenge of, I know you said you don't like this phrase, work-life balance, but at the same time, you're giving us some very practical things that I think anyone would say is helping to keep your life in balance. Would you disagree with that assessment of what you're sharing?
Not at all. In fact, I often will tell audiences, I've never been to a child's room where they have a picture of their parent working hard at their desk.
Hmm. But if their parent is a basketball star, they may have a picture of him working hard in that capacity, you think?
Yeah, they might if they look up to them, if the parent's a good role model.
Uh-huh.
But I bet you that child doesn't want to share their parent all the time with the people sitting in the seats.
Okay. I understand what you're saying. Well, you talk about taking breaks, too.
Yep.
Help us with that one, because that sounds like it's pulling you away from work, pulling you away from family. Why is that so important?
Well, I take the old phrase in my, when all of us who are parents, when we've told our children, you go to time out.
Mm-hmm.
And if any children like my grandchildren, they sit in the corner and giggle for a couple of minutes knowing that their parents going to let them out short.
Okay.
But I don't know, there are statistics, and you're probably more familiar with them than I am, that as human beings, with our minds, given all the things that we shove into those 7 inches, as I mentioned before, we can probably only work at one task for no more than 60 to 90 minutes before our productivity starts to drop. And we start making mistakes, working against ourselves. And that's when you need to put yourself in timeout.
Hmm.
Maybe it's you walk away from your desk, you go get a sip of water. If it's a nice day and you can do it, you walk around the parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to periodically, during the course of the day, change that scenery. You've got to change the scenery for your mind to get sharp again so you can get back in and focus. Now, I'd like to think that all those people we see smoking out in front of their buildings are doing that, but they're not doing that.
No.
But in a sense, maybe they are. So all of us have to be cognizant of the fact as to what's the limits of our effectiveness and our productivity, and be cognizant of the fact that if we take a 5-10 minute break, we're going to be better off for it and be more productive, as opposed to trying to work straight through for several hours.
Now, you give a great example here, Chris, and I think this really resonates throughout Indian country. With the tobacco, of course, you know, historically, tobacco was something sacred across many tribal lines, but it's become an addictive substance. And one of the messages, as I work as a physician with people who are stopping smoking, is if they just stop smoking, they still need to give themselves permission to take breaks. And I think it's an interesting observation you made, because many of the folks who are smoking, they have this built-in mechanism where they're stepping away from their desk periodically to take a smoking break. Well, when they quit, it doesn't mean they should stop taking breaks. They just should do it differently, right?
Exactly right. If they quit smoking but still take the break, they're actually, you know, lengthening their lifespan and their mental capacity and ability to stay sharp, whereas, if, as you know as a physician, if they're smoking, they're shortening their lifespan.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No, great observations. So any more on this productivity topic?
Yeah, there's a couple of things that I think your audience would like to hear. I know that these are things that I know work in many situations. And the first one is a lot of us pride ourselves on being good multitaskers.
Hmm.
I have people tell me, Chris, I do my best work when I'm in a crisis or handling more than one thing at the same time. And I say to those folks, well, great, multitasking is multi-dumb.
Hmm.
Okay, because when you multitask, you get the opportunity to screw up more than one thing at the same time.
Okay.
Okay. Now, look, we can all do more than one or two things at the same time, but we cannot effectively handle more than one or two things. We cannot effectively focus on more than one or two things because we don't have that kind of mental capacity.
Mm.
And what happens is neither topic, neither task, if there's only two, gets the right amount of attention that they deserve. They don't get done on time. They don't get done correctly. And in many cases, they get done wrong, and you've got to go back and work on them all over again.
Mm-hmm.
So multitasking is multi-dumb. If you find yourself always in the situation of having to deal with one or more or two things at the same time, take a hard look at your priorities and go back to that question I said before. What's the most important thing I have to work on first?
Mm-hmm.
I already mentioned this earlier, but owning the first 10 or 15 minutes of your day is a way for you to get positioned for your day and be more productive because you know where you're going to start and you have the time to get ready for that as opposed to jumping into emails, phone calls, whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm. So tell me if I'm hearing this right and applying it right, because I'm trying to go back to that person who says they really thrive under pressure. And I'm thinking, well, even though they may say they're multitasking, some of those people probably are doing just what you said. There might be five things going on, but if they're really effective in that setting, couldn't they be narrowing their focus on one of those crises, you know, in sequence, and they just seem to thrive in that environment where a lot is going on? Is that possible?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, I'm not looking at the world through rose-colored glasses here. You know, life can be tough sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to recognize that you just don't have the focus. And focus is the key word here to handle every single one of those things the way it needs to be handled. So you might try to stabilize one or two or three of those crises till you can get back to them and focus on the most important one first. It's the ability to not get sucked into the fray and for you to take charge of the circumstances as opposed to being victimized by them.
Now, how about our personal habits? I know that's something that you see as being very important in this whole equation. Does that tie into this productivity issue as well?
Absolutely. I mean, how do you organize yourself during the course of the day? How do you deal with interruptions? How do you, as an individual, communicate with others? How do you, for example, you know, if you and I could go to every one of your listeners' places of work or even their home, their kitchen area, and look at their counter space or their desktop, 20% of all the stuff out there should not be there. It's clutter.
Hmm.
You know, so how do you, what's your personal organization? How do you like to keep things? How do you like to store things? Many of us are pack rats, and we just refuse to throw things away, and they may never see the light of day for 6-8 months, yet we don't get rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that, all those things are visual reminders of our clutter.
Hmm.
You know, I have a program that I call my 20% rule.
Okay.
And it's very simple. You know, 20% of the clients that you have, if you're in business, you probably should fire. They're draining you of energy. 20% of all the things that we write are not necessary. 20% of the content of what we write could probably be eliminated and make things simpler.
Mm-hmm.
20% of what we all do individually is probably irrelevant. And what we should try to do is eliminate those steps. And what I ask folks to do is to schedule an appointment with themselves for 1 hour a week. Put it on your calendar. Where's Chris? He's meeting with Chris. It's a very important meeting.
Hmm.
And during that 1 hour, work on something that's very important to you, whether it be personally or professionally, but do so in an uninterrupted way to take control of the time you have available to you.
Great messages, Chris. We're running out of time in this segment, but we haven't mentioned recently, if someone's just joined us, how they can tap into your wisdom, get a copy of your book. Remind us how to do that again.
Website, again, is chrisruisi.com. And the book you can purchase at Amazon or at my website under the products page. And if you do it there, I'll sign the book and send you some other goodies along with it, my playbook and some chocolate.
Okay, Chris Ruisi, the coach. He's the author of the book Step Up and Play Big. If you need that spelling of his last name again, it's R-U-I-S-I. Chris is not going away. I'm not doing it either. I invite you to stay by for our final segment of American Indian Living. We'll be right up with that. Stay tuned.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
Navigating this world when you are undereducated can be difficult. I'm Dr. Ben Carson, and I know this for a fact. When I was growing up, my family lived in dire poverty, and because of my poor learning skills, my classmates called me dummy. My life began to turn around when my mother encouraged me to read. I went from the bottom of my class to graduating from Yale University and becoming the youngest director of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins Hospital. I know how important it is to nurture a child's dream.
When I grow up, I want to become a scientist.
I want to be a doctor, just like Ben Carson.
I hope to become an engineer.
I want to be a teacher or maybe a broadcaster.
The Carson Scholars Fund is impacting schools across the nation by encouraging children to read, write, and excel at math and science so they can realize their dreams. We need your help. To learn more about the Carson Scholars Fund and to donate, visit our website at carsonscholars.org.
After all, the person who has the most to do with your success is you.
I'm in almost every school bus and classroom.
I go to school with your children.
We say the Pledge of Allegiance together.
You see me around the neighborhood and you tell me that I'm a pretty good kid.
Well, I'm one out of every five children in America and I'm struggling with hunger.
This problem is closer than you think. My teacher tells me we can grow up to be whatever we want.
I want to grow up to be someone who doesn't go to bed hungry.
There's enough food in this country to feed everybody.
Please visit feedingamerica.org today and find your local food bank for ways to help.
Every dollar you donate helps provide 8 meals for kids like me, quietly struggling with hunger.
Together, we are Feeding America. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Dr. David DeRose and Chris Ruisi with you for our final segment of today's edition of American Indian Living. You're looking to increase your potential. You're looking to increase your effectiveness at work. Chris has been helping you look at some of the steps that are often overlooked. Chris, great book, Step Up and Play Big. And one of the things I liked about the book is you can just open the book up, turn anywhere, and you've got these boxes, these key points, these outlines. It's just a very usable book, and it's not a difficult book to get through. Was that the goal that you had in pulling it together?
Yep. That was it, David. We all learn in different ways. I learn by short little hits, and I have to figure there are other people out there like me. And I wanted to make it easy for people to have the choice to take action to improve themselves or change whatever they're doing and take away excuses for them to accomplish that.
Great. I know one of the things you're really big on is something that you refer to as self-development. What is that all about?
Well, if you go to page 145 in the book, the last chapter,
mm-hmm.
It's called Creating Your Own Step Up and Play Big Developmental Growth Plan. Without something in writing, nothing ever gets done. You've got to be able to, as someone once said, ink it so you can think it. But once you put something on paper, it takes on a life of its own. And what I tried to do here was to create a template based upon what people read in the book for them to address those areas that they wanted to either enhance their knowledge or improve on one particular issue. And really, it's pretty tough to deal with more than one improvement issue over the course of a 6-month or 12-month period. So the plan really has 10 basic questions. You know, what do you want to improve upon? What are your goals?
Mm-hmm.
And then explain why. And most importantly, what are the consequences of doing nothing? You know, we sometimes, I'm not going to do that. But we don't think about what the consequences are of that decision. I ask for what new results do you want to achieve? How will this change your performance, your career, your life, your business? Then a goal is a goal when it has a specific time frame.
Mm-hmm.
So we ask in the plan, what's the date by which you want to accomplish this by, and how you will go about doing it. So if a person just follows these 10 questions, and I didn't go over them all,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They're going to create a practical, usable plan. them to follow. Now, what they also need to do is to find someone they can refer to as their accountability partner. Maybe
okay.
it's a coach, maybe it's an associate, maybe it's a former boss who they respect, and ask that person to help hold them accountable to achieving the goals that they've established in their plan.
Why is that so important?
Which part, the accountability?
Yeah.
Because it's impossible for us to hold ourselves accountable. Think of how many times, maybe you're different, and I don't mean that disrespectfully,
no.
that you might have set a resolution for the new year.
Mm-hmm.
How many times did you actually achieve it?
Hmm.
You know, I want to lose weight, and it's not a very good goal. You say it to yourself several times, and maybe by January 20th, or today's date, January 23rd, you not only have forgotten the resolution, you forgot where you wrote it down. Having an accountability partner, not someone to give you unhealthy type of feedback, but healthy, constructive feedback to help validate the reality of your goal and whether or not it's still important to you.
Okay.
There's nothing wrong with asking for help. Nowhere is it written that we have to go through life and its challenges by ourselves. There is always someone out there who's willing to help you, and you should build a network of friends and family members who meet that criteria, people who are sincerely interested in helping you.
Well, Chris, maybe you can make this real practical in the context that I'm often finding myself in. When I'm dealing with patients, when I'm speaking to audiences, often we're talking about making lifestyle changes to address disease processes. And typically, people will say things to me or will intimate that they don't really want to go public with this decision because they're afraid they're going to fail. They don't want to tell someone they're changing their whole diet or they're getting on a new exercise program because if they don't stick with it, that will just increase their guilt and shame. How do you approach a person who says, I don't want to be accountable to anyone because I'm afraid I'm going to fail?
What I would say to that person is, well, you've just made a decision. Are you ready to accept the consequences that if you don't have someone who holds you accountable, you will fail, and maybe your life, your family, your marriage, your job may be in jeopardy?
Wow.
If you can accept that, then okay.
Now, that's a good point, because I think time and time again, if people aren't willing to bring some other people into that dialogue, you're exactly right. They're often setting themselves up to fail, aren't they?
Exactly right. And it becomes a self-fulfilling philosophy.
Chris, you've got so much wisdom in the book. I know you got all kinds of resources on the website. Earlier in the show, you said you've got these 3 to 5 minute podcasts. Tell us just a little bit more about why we might want to tap into that free resource.
Well, the podcasts, you can listen to them at any time you want. You can download them.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to them on your computer or your laptop. You can take them with you in your car. You can take some quiet time if you're on a break, that 10-minute break we talked about. Listen to one of the podcasts. They're a very simple and painless way of increasing your learning. Look, every individual who wants to be successful at whatever they do, life, family, work, needs to make a decision that they want to grow and look for opportunities to grow every single day of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm not good at math, David, but if you can bring about a less than 1% improvement in your life every day,
wow,
at the end of the year, that's a big number.
That's huge. You're right.
Even though 10% of 1%, it's still going to be a big number, and your life, those around you, will be better off for it. So it's an ability to invest in yourselves, and that's why that self-development plan is so critically important. When I work with business owners and business leaders, I make the point very, very early on that when they get better, everything else around them gets better. Their business automatically follows.
Mm.
So if we get better as individuals, as a parent, as a sibling, as a child to our parents, if we work on getting better, all of our relationships will follow along.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's maybe an overstatement, but there's always those people in our lives who don't want to have good relationships. But at least you'll know who they are. I refer to those people as skunks. And my rule there is you never chase a skunk, because when you do, the skunk has fun and you get smelly. So self-development is so critical to any level of success that you would want to achieve.
Chris, there's another recurring concept that you mentioned in the book. You shared it with us already in the show, and it's this idea of watching the game films.
Yep.
How do we do that? When do we do it?
Well, you do it as often as you'd like, and I'll tell you a story to help illustrate the point. And I'm going to go back to my youngest son. You know, after we had our very interesting and challenging year as a parent, his first year in college, we set up a plan. Actually, I gave Andrew a template, a framework, and he kind of filled in the blanks. But he set goals for every semester in a variety of categories. And at the end of every semester, he would sit down and evaluate himself as to how well he did with the goals he set for each of those categories. Okay? And then he would sit back and say, okay, based upon what took place this last semester, going forward into my next semester, what should I start doing? What would I stop doing? What would I do more of? What would I do less of? The bottom line is we all have experiences, good and bad. You can do that exercise at the end of a good experience to raise the bar. I mean, winning teams look at their game films at the end of games that they win, as well as games that they don't perform that well. Because there's always something in the past that you can carry forward with you as a learning device into the future to make your future better. And as a result, Andrew went from a 2.4 GPA to a 3.4 GPA.
That's huge.
Before he was awarded his sword for leadership, he became battalion commander. He became the XO for their annual training for incoming freshmen. And he achieved his goal of becoming a Navy F-18 Super Hornet pilot.
Tremendous story. Tremendous story.
So we have that. We have the ability to do that within us if we accept the responsibility for our own self-improvement, our self-development, and game plans is a fun way, a harmless way, to learn from your past experiences.
Great messages, Chris. All too soon, though, our time has slipped away from us. We have got to run. You've been listening to Leadership Insights from Chris Ruisi. He's the coach. His book, again, Step Up and Play Big, you can get it at Amazon or at chrisruisi.com. That's R-U-I-S-I. For all of us at American Indian Living, I'm Dr. David DeRose, wishing you, as always, the very best of health.
This is Life Talk Radio.